If you've been sitting on a business idea, Shopify is the place where you can actually make it real. The thing I like about Shopify is it takes the scary part out of starting. You're not just sitting there trying to figure out a website, payments, checkout, inventory, all these little things that stop people before they even launch. When I think about building a storefront, the biggest thing is friction. You want someone to land on your page, like what you're selling, and be able to buy without getting stuck. That's where Shopify is huge. Shopify Checkout is built to help more customers finish their purchase. And when they come back, their details are already saved. One tap and they're done. The cool part is Shopify powers millions of businesses worldwide, from huge brands that you know, like Mattel and Gymshark, to small businesses just getting started. So whether you're building the next big brand or launching your first product, the infrastructure is already there. Once that part is handled, you can focus on the real work, building the brand, getting attention, and bringing people to your storefront so the business can grow. That moment when someone actually buys, that's when the idea becomes real. With Shopify, nothing stands between your idea and a real business, so go make it one. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/crypto101. That's a free trial at shopify.com/crypto101. Are you curious about the economic forces shaping your daily life? The Planet Money podcast from NPR makes sense of the economy in ways you'll actually understand and enjoy. Guys, you love listening to the rundowns. I get some of that information from this NPR Planet Money podcast, especially recently with the war going on, the Strait of Hormuz. You're just kind of getting those updates as they come from these guys. They put out a ton of awesome content. It's a different perspective from Crypto 101, but still a great listen. So go over there and check out the Planet Money podcast if stuff like current events and the finance world interest you. Each story on Planet Money starts with a question. Recent episodes ask why Pokemon cards are growing faster than your retirement account. Questions about the war, just like we talked about recently a lot on our program, from the job market to the stock market to prices at the supermarket. Planet Money explains it all. Planet Money is a different kind of world where the complex economy somehow makes sense, where human stories supersede abstract theories so you can learn, laugh, and be entertained. It's econ, but just down to earth. The hosts go to unusual lengths to explain the economy. They've published their own book to track the global supply chain. They've shot a satellite into space to understand the economics of the private space industry. They've gone inside a live book auction to show how ideas get to market. It's the kind of show where you learn something, probably laugh, and walk away seeing the world a little differently. And I think if you like Crypto 101, you'll enjoy Planet Money. So maybe check that out. Follow NPR's Planet Money podcast and understand how money shapes the world. All right, everybody, welcome back to a Friday edition of the Crypto Rundown. There's a lot of volatility in the markets around the world. The chip trade seems to be falling apart. There is some crazy volatility in Korea that we're going to talk about. But how is this affecting crypto? How is this affecting Bitcoin? It's not as volatile as you might think, but we have our two chartists here to break it all down. We've got Brendan, we've got Hunter, we've got an awesome Friday program scheduled for you. We're going to jump right into the charts in just 1 second, but a ton of other news to cover, so you're going to want to stick away. Check the timestamps below to see what the topics, if you're interested in all of them, some of them. We appreciate you being here. Give it a like. If you're new here, bottom right, hit subscribe. And Brendan, let's dive right into the charts. Happy Friday, my friend.
Happy Friday, man. Good to have both you on here with us. Good to have everyone in the audience. Definitely a lot going on here, right? Tons of volatility across the market. We'll get into it. But really a couple lead catalysts here that's really propelling us, right? Back and forth, a little bit to the downside here in the last couple of days. But we'll get into that. In fact, let's just open up the charts here as I maybe walk through even some of these catalysts, because I think it's important to understand these. So let's look at Bitcoin first here and really what's going on. Because what we see here with Mr. Bitcoin is we chop sideways really for the last week or so. And this is that daily chart that we like to really look at. But we chopped sideways after this most recent move to the upside. And we just went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. We peaked our head over that 50-day moving average just a little bit. And then we fell back down in here. Now you're looking at this and probably going, well, you know, this looks pretty choppy. Like, what's the cause for this? Well, at the start of the week, we basically were coming down here. Good inflation data came out, and we'll get into that. Pretty drastically lower than expected CPI and PPI. And then so the markets here started pumping on that news. And we'll explain kind of the catalyst and what that means and why inflation data and, you know, all these things even mean anything to the crypto market. But, you know, following kind of this move up, we saw the markets continuing to bleed back to the downside here. Now, again, I think there's three catalysts, or really two big ones. You have the inflation data, and then you have what's happening over in TradFi as well. Now, the TradFi markets here have been getting peppered, and crypto was actually outperforming kind of leading up into this, but just a little bit. You know, I'm talking about like recent data, but here you have NASDAQ just getting hammered here on the last three or so days, which coincidentally is when Bitcoin really started falling, right? The last 3 days. So you saw NASDAQ kind of peak up to its high of day, fall another 1.5%. The following day after that, it fell another 2.5%. Today, it fell another 2%, almost 3% to the downside. And so you are seeing risk assets across the board really start to come back in a little bit here. And that's one of the causes that, is causing a bit of the, frog in my throat. A little bit of a sell-off here in the crypto market is because you're just seeing a de-risking. Now, up until, I would say, the last one to two days, what you really saw heavily was three major spaces selling off. You saw the memory space in DRAM. You saw the chip space. And then three, you saw those AI players. And you really started to see those areas, which were extremely hot. They were sucking liquidity away from other areas of the market. And it felt like money was flowing out of everything and into those. And everything in those spaces were just going parabolic for the last, you know, little while here. Now what we've started to see is a little bit of the opposite happen. You started to see those areas specifically get hit while other areas have somewhat kind of recovered. And we'll get into those. But just briefly to show this, you know, that's NASDAQ kind of falling here and reaching a big old important point. But then you look at things like DRAM, which is the memory space that I've talked about, an absolute free fall, you know, falling 40% off of its highs. You could go and you could see, I would say, you know, even different areas beyond just like DRAM and tech, you could probably go and see some of these other like AI plays, again, just getting hammered. You could probably see AMD, you know, off the highs as well, falling here. And so again, those areas of tech that were really, really hot and sucking liquidity away from the market, those are the ones that were getting hammered. And now what you see is the crypto space actually getting a little bit of a bump, or it was. So now the question is, well, if that was the case, why is crypto, you know, coming back in here? And it goes back to the original statement that I made, which is just that risk assets across the board now are kind of getting a little bit scared. They're seeing how everything's falling, and you have these investors who want to be more risk on really kind of step away a little bit. And those are the people who are saying, you know, let's just put our money on the sidelines. Let's see how this plays out. And then after something like that, we'll come back in. And so if we get into these PPI and CPI numbers, the reason why these matter to crypto is because as you have the markets trying to price in what's going to happen with rate cuts, you have the crypto space, which has historically performed really good when the market wants to cut rates. And then you have the crypto market not performing great when there are rate hikes on the horizon. And so what we saw here was this was the CPI number coming in at 3.5% below the 3.8% expected. Core fell to, you know, to 2.6 below the 2.8 expected. And month over month CPI fell to negative 0.4%, which is the biggest monthly drop that we've seen since May of 2020. PPI, which is basically a different form of measuring inflation, but you have this falling to 5.5 versus the 6.2 expected, core falling to 4.7 versus the 5.2 expected, and then month over month falling to negative 0.3. So why does this, and I don't, do I have that on the screen? Can you guys see that?
No, I see Bitcoin.
You see that. Okay. Let's just, I guess, you know, we went over the numbers, so it's not a big deal, but let's try this one more time and see if you guys can't see this. But yeah, I mean, these are just those numbers that I was referencing just to give everyone a little bit of a graphic to kind of match this stuff to. That was the CPI, and then that was the PPI numbers. But I think that's going to be a big thing to kind of keep an eye out on here. Because if you continue to see inflation lowering, that increases the chance for rate cuts. And that's really the kind of market conditions that the crypto space likes. And if you start seeing it go back in the other direction, then you know there's probably some turbulence here. So in the charts here, I think the big thing we're watching out for is, can Bitcoin really peak its head through this mid $60,000 level? Like, that's the thing that everyone wants to care about here. Can Bitcoin get over this hump, start pushing into higher highs? Because really, since last October on Bitcoin, you've had just lower highs, lower highs, lower highs, lower highs, over and over and over again. Bitcoin has been unable to break above that 200-day moving average, and it's just been getting clobbered at every attempt to the upside that it's had. So the big thing that we need to watch for a reversal here is, can we actually break out into higher highs? Obviously, we found a little bit of a bottom here right around the high 50,000s, low 60,000s. Now, the next real question is, can we hold those lows and can we actually attack the upside? And I think that's the big thing that we need to kind of wait and watch out for here. The other thing is that the 50-day moving average, this kind of pink or reddish line, is right around where we're at, but you also have the blue line, which is the 20-day moving average. So the 20 and 50-day moving averages here, right almost side by side. And if you get the 20-day crossing up over the 50-day, that's called a golden cross. And if you can get a scenario where you have a golden cross and then price action trading above that golden cross and bouncing off of it as support and going further to the upside, it's a really good look for the bulls. And so I think that's another thing that we would want to keep an eye out on, should that be the case. So big story here, you know, is there an absolute bottom in yet? Do we have that data yet? We still don't. There's still some downside risk. Again, I think right now the big fear is what's going to happen over on the traditional side, how are risk assets as a whole going to respond? But I would say outside of that TradFi risk, crypto doesn't look quite as bad. Again, really before you had the traditional financial side and the equities and the indices really start to fall off a cliff, you had Bitcoin doing well. I mean, it was pushing higher. It was trying to break out of the 50-day moving average. It was trying to break through highs. And it was doing a lot of that stuff. And it wasn't until you started to see a little bit of a rollover that the selling pressure started to come back in. So,
you know what slows teams down more than anything? It's not always headcount, budget, or even the tools themselves. It's when the way work gets done lives in someone's head and never actually gets documented. Then someone new joins, a new platform gets rolled out, or a teammate leaves, and suddenly everyone's doing the same process in a different way. That's exactly the problem today's sponsor, Scribe, was built to solve. Scribe is a workflow AI platform that captures any workflow in real time and turns it into a step-by-step documentation automatically. You just turn on the extension, do the process like you normally would, and Scribe builds the guide as you go, capturing every click, step, and screenshot. And it's already trusted by over 80,000 enterprises, including nearly half of the Fortune 500. With our team being remote, I have definitely had moments where I've had to explain the same setup or process more than once to a colleague, and it always feels like something that should have been documented the first time. With Scribe, what could take hours of writing, screenshots, and cleanup can be ready to share in under a minute. Scribe also automatically redacts sensitive information like names, emails, and account numbers from screenshots. Admins can enforce that across the team so nothing slips through the cracks. Plus, anyone following the process can get real-time on-screen guidance showing exactly where to click inside the actual tool. And Scribe doesn't just document workflows. It uses AI to suggest ways to improve them, helping you spot redundant steps, bottlenecks, and places to simplify. To book a personalized enterprise demo, visit scribe.how/crypto101. That's scribe.how/crypto101. One thing I love about summer is everything's just getting easier. You're outside more, you're taking vacations, and it's the time where you're really not trying to overthink every outfit. You just want stuff that feels good, works, and sometimes is a little cool. That's why I keep coming back to Quince. They make those pieces that you end up just wearing all season. For me, it's the 100% European linen shirt and the matching linen pants. That has become one of my go-to beach vacation outfits. I've gotten so many compliments on it. It It's breathable. It's comfortable. It looks put together, but it still feels relaxed. You can literally wear this thing going to the beach all day, walking by the water for a sunset, and then head straight to dinner later, feeling completely comfortable and looking fashionable. And that's really what Quince does well. Their 100% European linen pants and shirts are easy to wear, perfect for summer, and the price is unbelievable. And they start at literally just $34. They also have soft tees you can wear all day, plus lightweight cotton sweaters that are perfect for when the temperature drops a little at night. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middleman, so you're paying for exceptional quality, not the brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become one of those brands people trust for home, travel, and everyday essentials too. You've heard me talk about their website before. It's super fun to scroll around. They literally have everything. So make your summer wardrobe easier. Go to quince.com/crypto101 for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/crypto101 for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/crypto101.
In a funny way, yeah. It kind of brings back onto the table that old lore of crypto saying, hey, Bitcoin and crypto lead the market. It's like, oh, Bitcoin hit an all-time high, the NASDAQ, the S&P is going to be right behind it. And we were kind of riding that for a year, 2 years. A lot of people were saying it. It was a fun talking point. And then Bitcoin fell off a cliff, and obviously the memory trade and everything else kept going. And so it was like, oh, well, that lore doesn't hold anymore. That's not true. No. Again, there's no actual like study behind it, but it was an interesting talking point. And then Bitcoin fell and the memory trade kept going. And now we're kind of seeing, like you showed here with your charts. And Hunter, let's get to you next with your charts. If you want to let Brendan, if you want to let Hunter pull up his, is like, hey, as Bitcoin kind of led the way down, and if it holds here, at least with less volatility than the S&P, the NASDAQ, and specifically this memory trade, is it kind of a fun talking point maybe to bring back, as you kind of noticed with those moving averages kind of curling up? It is an interesting point. So Hunter, take us through your wisdom, your charts. Do you agree with Brendan? Do you disagree? That's what this is all about, you know, discourse and understanding, you know, different opinions. So let's hand it off to you, Hunter.
Yeah, well, I actually have a great segue chart for that relationship of Bitcoin related to the NASDAQ, which means rotation style trading here. We've got the Bitcoin relative to the NASDAQ. So Bitcoin on the numerator, NASDAQ on the denominator. And you can see this relationship over the last 9 years, and we're hitting multi-year lows, this trend line right here. And each time we've hit this relationship where Bitcoin was very undervalued relative to NASDAQ, like performance-wise, those were the marks of the turns in the crypto cycle. And we're seeing that signature right now. Now, it can play out for several weeks, several months, as it did over here in 2022, but we're seeing that signature, you know, that kind of wick down onto the trend line, and we're getting some good movement this week. So I'm saying right now, Bitcoin is looking pretty buoyant, and it does look like there is a bit of a rotation back into the leading risk on asset, which is Bitcoin, just by looking at this chart alone. Now, this is just one chart. This is one data point, but it's just something to be interested that we're interested in, because it is like somewhat of a, you know, higher high, higher low, higher high, higher low. The market structure is shifting like that. So I like this chart. It really paints a really pretty picture of when capital starts to rotate. So we'll be monitoring this going forward, but it does look like Bitcoin is starting to outperform at least the traditional markets when it comes to NASDAQ. But looking high time frame just on Bitcoin it's alone, Bitcoin spot, well, this is why we're bouncing right here. We've got multiple levels that are starting to come and coalesce. Not only do we just have a wonderful linear trend line that we're bouncing off of, we have the 200-week moving average, which we actually closed below a few weeks ago, but reclaimed it. So that's usually a bullish sign where you kind of have that fake out and then you come back above. We're really going to want to try to hold above it this week so we can kind of get continuation up towards that 50-week moving average, towards around the 70,000 level that I'm really eyeing right now. But until then, we don't have full confirmation. We still need a little bit more data. But nonetheless, if we also take our anchored volume weighted average price from the 15,000 2022 cycle low, well, lo and behold, where did we bounce most recently? Right off that level. And that's a huge level because that pretty much shows you where all the volume averages out, where all participants, where they've traded from a volume weighted perspective, that is the price. So that's like a fair value price. That's one way to look at fair value. Now, you can look at different on-chain metrics as well for fair value measures, but this is a traditional technical analyst view of looking at some fair value. We bounced right off that. On top of that, if we take a Fib retracement tool from the cycle low in 2022 to our current all-time high at 126K, and we come and we put out the 0.618 Fibonacci retracement, which is the golden ratio. So it's a mathematical thing. Well, where was that level? It was at 57. I'll make this a little bit bigger for you guys, font-wise. It was at 57,800. Where did we bounce right here? Look at all these variables coalescing right here. That low on the Coinbase pair was 57,700. So just south of $100 missed. And so you can see that we're at a very pivotal point right here. And here's what I want to kind of press upon you. When we get to these big high time frame levels, what happens is a lot of people, they start feeling the bearish sentiment and all that, but these are big levels. This has happened over the last 4 years, and we haven't touched them yet. So when we get to those points, we can at least expect a bit of reprieve or a bit of a bounce. And so it's warranted. I mean, we were going down for 2 months. We've been going down for about 9 months since the all-time high. And we had, you know, a rally earlier this year for about 3 months. So it's not really that random that we're bouncing here a bit. Now, of course, we're not out of the woodworks, of course. We're still in a bit of a range on the low time frame that we can just kind of use a parallel channel to show. If I make this, and you can see we're just kind of ranging. We're at the midpoint of that range right now. The moving averages are kind of tightening up. So there isn't a trend at the moment. It's just a range environment. And the old adage for a range is trade the range until it breaks. So we'll be looking at the top side of the range. We'll be looking towards the bottom side of the range. And until we get a trending environment to where we move back up above our prior high right here, 67, 68K, and retest, well, we're still in a bearish trend long term, but that would be our first sign of strength on the short to medium term to where we could at least connect up here towards 70K. Now, just to wrap up Bitcoin here real quick, I'll show you exactly why we're resisting where we are. If we take our volume profile from the beginning of the February price action to where we are now, this whole range, you can see we're coming up, right? We rejected at the point of control back in the middle of June. It's a very, very important level. And then now we're at the value low, which is this orange line on the volume profile histogram. And you can see that this range right here is resistance. And right now we're trying to make maybe another lower high, but if we don't, then that would be our first sign of strength because there's a lot of volume that transpired here. So if you get above that, then that means bulls are starting to take control. At the moment, the bears have been in control. Nonetheless, though, we hit a massive level. We can easily just come back below this and hit this, you know, retest 60,000, make a higher low, and continue up. You know, that is a very big possibility. We have to play it that way. But the longer it sits down here, the longer it kind of lulls everybody to sleep, the more dangerous it gets to the upside. The asymmetric rest will be to the upside. So that's what I'm looking at on Bitcoin. I'm still, you know, full disclosure, I am long still right now from pretty much close to the lows. I don't have my full position anymore, but, you know, I'm still looking to possibly continue this move up for a little bit, at least till maybe, you know, the end of the month. So, yeah.
Okay. No, great stuff, Hunter. Thank you. And I think that again, everybody kind of has a different approach, different style. That's why I love having Brendan and Hunter on when we can at the same time to get that different type of breakdown. And if anybody's interested, refresh your page on YouTube. And you know, we talk about it all the time. Brendan has his trading course where you can get kind of this type of TA with Brendan and Hunter twice a week. So scroll down, check the link there to learn more about that. We've got, who do we have here in the chat? Let's see who's here. We got BTC Harpist, good morning. Kevin from Lakeland, Florida, not too far from me. Love that. Good morning, everybody. Let us know who's watching. Let us
not
know.
Not too far from me either.
Yeah, there you go. me and Hunter. That's right. The as we move on, I thought this was kind of cool to what we were talking about. Not really cool, but it's just really interesting. I mentioned at the top of the show, the volatility in South Korea has been crazy. It's been wild, and I think that's, you know, causing some ripples in the market that you're seeing. Of course, the memory trade that Brendan was talking about of kind of, you know, quote unquote, maybe falling off a cliff down 20, 30%. of these high flyers. This is the volatility chart I saw, and this chart goes back all the way to 1980 here, folks, on the left. So you're looking at similar to the 2008, which was a global financial crisis, similar to that 99 time, dot-com bubble. And like, I think it's cool, or not cool, but I think it's so unique to Korea right now, because a lot of those chip trades, a lot of those companies are based in South Korea. And so there's a lot of excitement in that country for the, you know, not maybe not the first time, but they're a leader, a global leader in this trade. And so I think it's gotten a lot of people, a lot of average people, everyday people, kind of get involved in the markets, getting excited because these companies are based in their country. But with all the leveraged ETFs and all the ability to go in and get exposure at unique rates that a lot of people probably don't understand, it seems to be causing some historic volatility over there. And I think that's creeping into the markets kind of in a way. Brendan, I bring this up from time to time. It reminds me of that. It was like the Nikkei trade. It was like August of 24, August of 24.
I think so.
And it was like a crazy unwind. And I remember me and you were on the rundown and we're just like, what is going on? It's like, oh, the Nikkei trade, it's a carry trade. And you got to unwind this trade to unwind that trade, to unwind this trade to get your money out. And it's like, is that why Bitcoin's down? Like, I didn't buy Bitcoin because of the Japan Nikkei. Like, this doesn't make sense to me. And so that was kind of a buying opportunity, I thought. Again, each situation is different. I don't think this is exactly the same, but it is interesting when you see kind of the plumbing of the global financial investment system kind of hit these walls. It is kind of good to zoom out and just kind of, it's a good time to zoom out and check your own trades, check your own portfolio and be like, okay, am I connected to this? Am I not? And again, we've been kind of watching and talking about this memory trade, part of the AI trade, just high flying. And I don't know. I think I've said on the show openly, like, hey, I had a couple things here and there that were doing well in it, but nothing crazy. And I felt like an outsider looking at it almost a little bit. And I think it's a lot easier to call a top when you're not emotionally invested. I've been watching this thing recently, like, this isn't going to last. There's no way. And then sure enough, you know, some of these things, the individual stocks and the Bitcoin miners were kind of tied up into that too, right? Like a lot of Bitcoin miners, Riot, Iron, they kind of, we've had on the show before, have pivoted from mining Bitcoin to now, oh, well, we'll sell you AI energy. And these stocks were flying up hundreds of percent, but now they're correcting 30. I saw some at 50, 60% correction. So, Brendan, just hop in there, Hunter. Let's get to your take second. But Brendan, any thoughts on the broader picture here with this volatility?
Yeah. I think with this kind of volatility, like it's always, you don't always have to be in a trade, right? It's volatile, it's choppy. Hunter and I have actually gone back and forth talking about this like pretty recently. Like sometimes the best trade you can make is no trade at all, and it's okay to sit on your hands. And especially if the markets are a little bit more uncertain and they are really volatile, the average person, you know, can't sit at their computer all day. They can't monitor this stuff. It freaks them out. If that does concern you, then I would say, hey, like do a little bit of dollar cost averaging, sit on the side and kind of do your own thing. But you don't feel like you have to necessarily get involved. Now, my whole idea is I think that where we're at down here as a whole is I think we will get buy the dip opportunities. I don't think the world's blowing up. I don't think this is the next nuclear event for the markets, for Bitcoin or for TradFi. It's like, you know, pullbacks happen, but I think that out of the ashes of these pullbacks, I think we get buying opportunities, and that's what I view this as. You know, you said the Japanese carry trade, that was a great example. You look at the tariff crash, that was a great example. You look at some of the buy the dip and like swing trading opportunities that came out of the tariff crash, or not the tariff crash, the geopolitical stuff that we had earlier this year. Tons of great trades that came out of that. I think that we're kind of in the same scenario with where we're at right now. Like I want to be positioning for the upside as opposed to positioning for the downside. And I had someone ask me like a week or two ago and say, hey, should I sell all my Bitcoin and expect prices to go lower? And it's like, well, no, I definitely don't want to do that. If anything, I want to accumulate more Bitcoin. However, is there downside risk? And the answer is still yeah. Like there is still downside risk. Bitcoin could still go to new lows. But I definitely do not want to be selling off all of my crypto at these levels and betting that we're going to go to new lows. I think that's just a different level of risky.
Yeah. Well said. Well, yeah, and regarding especially the volatility here in Korea, I mean, right now the EWY, which is the South Korea ETF, is down 30% from all-time highs. But as we've been speaking, it's up about 4 to 5% just this morning. Even the NASDAQ has already bounced about 1.5% since we've started this show. So definitely people catching in a bid. I'm still, you know, from the traditional standpoint, looking for higher lows, still pretty bullish. A 10% correction, not too much. But regarding maybe some of the unwind, especially in AI and memory, well, of course, we had the war begin and we had oil go up, and then we had worries about energy-driven inflation, then it came back down, and then now it's starting to go back up. And then we have, on top of that, issues with CapEx because of the energy-driven inflation, you have a two-pronged effect. They're kind of comorbid here. You have the energy-driven inflation, which will drive costs for AI, you know, electricity, power. But then also that also makes the Fed have to maybe pivot to raising rates. And then you need to issue more debt at CapEx at higher interest expense. So you have two things, and then you have that winding out down. And so then you see that liquidity maybe flowing back into other assets, other asset classes. And I can't necessarily prove that. I mean, spot Bitcoin ETF flows have been a bit weak this, you know, over the last month or so, but it does seem like that is something that might be happening right now as people are unwinding from the kind of AI memory play. And South Korea is definitely kind of the proxy for that.
Great points. Yeah. And I think just one final point on that is that I've talked about on the show how I've been like, hey, I'm kind of on the outside looking in on this memory trade, and it's been, you know, fascinating to watch. But I've never felt more confident as that starts to unwind, right? We've just talked about, hey, it's the belle of the ball. Who's the girl that you want to take to the dance? And, you know, it was crypto. we had our run. We truly did. We had our run. And then it shifted, and the money, you know, the money finds the hot new thing in the market. And so you're watching this thing just continuously go up, and like, hey, is this ever going to stop? And not only is it ever going to stop, is it ever going to go down? Like, I remember over the last 3 months, I mean, you could turn on any business channel, any podcast, and it's just any talking head saying, no, this makes sense. This Micron move makes sense. This DRAM ETF going up 150%. They don't have enough. They can name their price. They don't have enough. People will never stop buying. And like, as soon as you start hearing that stuff, my ears perk up of like, well, that's not how this thing works. That's not how the markets work. Like, somebody, you'll eventually get humbled.
I have another thing to kind of add onto that. Right now with like Anthropic and some of these models that are actually pretty expensive, we have like some of these Chinese models like Kimi K3 that are massive, and they are public and open sourced and free. And so when you start to hit this kind of bubble where people are like, okay, I'm having issues paying for a $100 or $200 subscription per month, I'm just going to go to this public model, that starts breaking down some of that AI narrative. I think we're starting to see something like that, because it is pretty expensive for the average user to use these models that we have here in the US relative to the open source kind of free models in China.
Yeah. And then I think as it feels like it's the CapEx race of, hey, spend as much as you can, build the biggest and best, but does that turn into ROI? And, you know, a lot of these companies that say,
right, it's all speculation just on forward returns, essentially.
Yeah. And then the companies that are using the AI be like, hey, we'll use whatever the best AI is if it brings us ROI. And then you start learning. I think Uber was one of the first ones to come out and say, hey, time out. We're spending too much on tokens. We're hiring these people to do their jobs, and they want to hire AI with the tokens, and our token expenditure is crazy. So it's a new era. There's a lot of learning. It's a lot of fun just to, you know, be in the markets, be involved and see, because it is a historical change in tech. But I specifically remember a couple different people just coming on and talking about the memory trade and saying, no, this thing won't go down. It's a name your price market. Like, that it's not going down. It's not cyclical. Traditionally, memory and chips has been cyclical. And like, it's not cyclical anymore. It's a name your price market. And I heard that, and I was like, I feel like that's the clip they play after a 30, 40% correction. But let's swing back into crypto, specifically Bitcoin, because Hunter mentioned the ETFs, and we have the first positive week for the first time in 9 weeks. Hunter said, the ETFs have been weak. But, you know, here you go here. Just seeing that first green blip kind of coming off the bottom there. So that's interesting to see that the inflows start to come back in. Speaking of Bitcoin ETFs, none bigger than BlackRock. Larry Fink making the rounds this week, getting some TV time, looking great as always, and talking about crypto and Bitcoin. So let's hear what he had to say.
There is no question, as I said it in earlier times that I was here, I was always worried about the leverage in Bitcoin and crypto. There was too much leveraged players in it. That's why we had the washout, and I think there's more stability at these levels here. But we don't see that much implicit leverage. For the scale of the capital markets today, the leverage is not as large. I mean, that doesn't mean there's not pockets. But as I said in my prepared remarks this morning, I'm very bullish on the markets over the next 12 months. I think there is no question.
Always good to hear Larry Fink being bullish. Obviously, talking his book with BlackRock having one of the largest Bitcoin ETFs, or the largest Bitcoin ETF. But I just thought that was interesting. But it's taking these pieces and building your puzzle. And this one jumped out to me this week was the Citadel. Friend of the show, Ken Griffith, of course, investing in crypto.com, raises $400 million from the largest U.S. retail market maker, the Citadel Securities, at a $20 billion valuation. I have a saying, I think Brent and I have talked about it, I don't fade Ken Griffith. That guy, the Citadel, basically, for those who don't know, they make money every day. They make money when the market goes up. They make money when the market goes down. That is the ultimate money printer. So I personally don't fade Ken Griffith, whatever he's doing. And so I thought this was really interesting. Them investing in crypto.com, kind of pairing off of what Larry Fink said of like, hey, seeing some stability at these levels. Obviously, crypto has been very volatile to the downside recently, but seeing some stability, the ETF flows show that. And then you start seeing this type of news and it's like, okay, The TradFi is here. We've known that, and it doesn't look like they're going anywhere. So, Hunter, is this news that gets you excited?
It's interesting because that $20 billion valuation, and Kronos, the coin itself, is at like a 2.6 billion market cap, and fully diluted, it's about 5.6 billion. I remember several years ago when the Kronos chain came out, and I actually was pretty involved with it, with a lot of the meme coins on there. Did well for a little bit, and then got absolutely rinsed as it came all the way back down. So I find this interesting, but it is, I agree. Citadel, they make money trading with order flow. They get special data that from retail, investors that they use against you. So it's always a little bit, skeptical of something like this. But it seems like some of the players. For instance, like a Robinhood and then, crypto, some people that made a foothold in the industry several years ago are starting to come back. It's like they put themselves out there and then they kind of all got rinsed or washed. And then now people are coming back, scooping them up. And it seems like because they have that U.S. jurisdiction, U.S. foothold, that people are trying to, build out their infrastructure now. But other than that, I don't have much more to say about the crypto.com purchase.
I'd be interested to see how this plays out. I don't feel, dare I say this, I don't feel like they've been super relevant for a bit.
Yeah.
And they're there, and they're certainly not small. They're a decent size. But I think they really peaked during a previous cycle. When you look back at the 2022 run, I think they were really, really popular and dominant there. We'll see. It's interesting. I don't think I would have expected this. I think that if you would have said that Citadel was investing in Kraken or Gemini or other places, I guess, well, maybe not those. I guess they could have been those, right? Public or private. If it's Kraken, Coinbase, Gemini, Robinhood, I would have been like, oh, that makes sense. Or even if it's in Circle or different players, I think I would have understood that a little bit more. But again, crypto.com, we'll see.
Crypto.com has been a big sponsor in a lot of I've seen it on the UFC.
Yeah.
What else has it been on? And I don't know if any of you guys ever used the crypto.com cards at all as well or had any experience there.
Yeah. Well, crypto.com arena is LA.
Oh, yeah. Of course. The arena.
Yeah. No, they got a lot of money to blow. It's interesting. I mean, they obviously have a book of business. And again, I don't fade Ken Griffith. It's just a rule of mine.
I like that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, here's the thing. I'm just a talking radio head here meant to stir the pot a little bit. My opinion and me stirring the pot and playing devil's advocate matters drastically less than what Ken Griffin and Citadel are doing, right? They know what's going on. It's like TiVo said, they're not the ones who typically lose. Who loses? It's the retail investors. So listen, I'm just your internet personality. I love talking about crypto. I play a devil's advocate and I like to stir the pot a little bit, but we like crypto.com for sure. And we'll have to watch how this plays out. I do like the idea though that they're coming in and they're saying, hey, we view now as the time to put money into this kind of thing. And I think that's a good sign. Again, they see long-term value. They wouldn't be coming in here and doing this, and Citadel wouldn't be getting involved if that wasn't the case. So I like that.
He's not the only one that continues to build and invest. Morgan Stanley rolling out the Bitcoin spot trading to E-Trade. That's officially live. And then they continue to build out. I have it on the sheet here. They continue to build out some S1s for their altcoin ETFs with Ethereum and Solana. And kind of just to remind the listeners, is Morgan Stanley's not a huge ETF player. If you go and look through their offerings, it's not a ton. So if they're kind of going through the motions and taking the time to apply and set these things up, this is the type of stuff, again, that they're not doing for 6 months, for a year, one cycle. They're looking out and saying, hey, I think this is a part of the future, in my opinion. And they're going to be, they want to do this because they're going to start, you know, doing, hey, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5% allocation to crypto for some of their clients. And they don't want to have to sell Larry Fink's ETF. They want to sell their own to their clients. So they continue to build this stuff out, which I think is a net positive long term. Hunter, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, and Brendan actually said this earlier this week. It's competition like breeds innovation, and it's something that I like. So more competitors in the market. Also, it's just more vehicles actually provides more liquidity. There's a reason why money has a ton of liquid or water terms: currency, banks, liquidity, because it always needs to be flowing. And so the more vehicles there are, the more products, the more money's flowing, the more the market is liquid and efficient. I like this. So, you know, usually maybe a typical asset manager jumping into the ring, starting to sell their own product. I think that's the same thing as like a Robinhood building its own chain. You know, you're building on rails. You're trying to bring things in-house so you have more control. Also, because there's a lot of fees. I mean, expense ratios are very low on a lot of these ETFs. But in scale, as you get trillions of dollars into these assets, I mean, that's going to be billions of dollars in revenue down the road. That means, you know, if they are able to gather market share, I mean, it's a very competitive business. But nonetheless, it just opens up more vehicles, more liquidity. And so I like it there.
Brendan, anything to add?
No, not a ton else to add. I think Hunter and you hit it right on the head there. It makes sense that, you know, maybe they would want to get a little bit more involved, but no other thoughts from me.
Very cool. Thank you. Let's talk about the Clarity Act. I'm seeing this is getting a sad part of the show that we do every week, but the Clarity Act, odds are starting to roll over.
Had something yesterday.
Yeah, I saw it was like, okay, President Trump's going to go on the Hill and meet, and they're going to start talking about it. But there's just, you know, there's the clause that they want, you know, President Trump family not to be able to profit, and crypto is going to get those Democrats across the line that they need. And it just doesn't look like it's going to happen. I think the odds are now around 40%. So we're even under 50%, but there's people they're talking about it on the Hill. They're trying to get it moved. I know that there's the recess for Congress and the Senate coming up in August. So that was kind of not the final timeline forever, but it was, hey, maybe before the midterm elections, this could be the timeline. So not looking good, but there is conversations being had. I'll keep a lookout over the weekend for news to see if there's anything new that comes out or anything worth talking about. Let's finish on a positive note. And this just came across hot off the wire. Thought this was really interesting. Number one, it's crypto. Number two, because it's a firm that we've had on the podcast before. And number three, fellas, number three, and arguably the most important, it involves football. Football season is around the corner. If you close your eyes, You need to take a deep breath. You can smell that fresh cut grass on your local high school field as you get ready for two-a-days in August. They're right around the corner. Training camp is right around the corner, whether you're in high school D3, D2, or D1, or the NFL. But we're going to talk about D1 football here, fellas. We're going to talk about crypto here, fellas. How do I tie that together? Galaxy just announced a partnership where they are the official data center and digital asset partner of the Texas Tech Red Raiders. Come on.
Love it, Texas, baby. Love it.
Texas Tech Red Raiders. The Red Raiders football is now the home of Galaxy Stadium. Got to get those guys back on the podcast. Maybe we could get some tickets. I'd love to go down to Lubbock. Lubbock. Texas in the fall.
We gotta get the head coach, head coach on.
Yeah, and their quarterback. He's a degenerate gambler. So I love it. That's probably why. It's literally it's perfect. This is what a sponsorship. What a sponsor.
This is awesome.
That's hilarious.
I am curious though, TiVo. Maybe you can give me some insight because this is more your world. How do they connect the dots to make this kind of thing happen? Like, what goes on at Galaxy where they're like, you know what we need to do? We need to go to Texas Tech, and we need to be their official digital assets and data center provider. Like, what goes through? How does that happen? That's just my question. I think it's awesome, by the way. If we have them back on, I'm going to give them kudos. I think it's really cool. I just want to know, how does that thought get initiated? You know?
Yeah, a quick Google here. I was like, who on the board of directors went to Texas Tech?
Just some intern.
quick Google. Nothing. I'll do some research because I think this is so great. I love it. Quick Google says none of the board of directors went to Texas Tech. I'll go see if there's anybody else. I think it's my thought was. There's got to be some connection at the top of the sphere because all this money for Texas Tech is going to NIL, and anybody that follows, you know, college sports these days is colleges turned into pros because of this NIL money. These deals are crazy. So this naming rights stadium is going to the school, but it's really probably going to the NIL fund to go and hire really the athletes to go there. So I think because it's interesting that it says the digital assets portion, but also the data center portion. Obviously, Texas, you know, I think the average person that doesn't travel a lot, or the average person around the world, but also even the average American that doesn't necessarily get out and hit the road, Texas is a huge state. It's unbelievably big. And there's so much undeveloped land that I think it's kind of a hot spot to be like, all right, we're going to go put a bunch of data centers there. So my guess is partnering with Texas Tech, partnering with Galaxy. Texas Tech probably has a lot of land grants because, and I'm just doing this off the top of my head, shout out to me. Texas Tech has a huge agricultural program. To have a big agricultural program, you have to own a lot of land. So there's some handshakes going on right now. It's like, hey, maybe we cut the, you know, maybe we cut the corn program or cut the lettuce program down a little bit and you give that sum of land to us and we're going to write you a $700 million check. If you put our name on the stadium and give us some land. So there might be a little bit of land deal going on here, or at least access to rights to buy the land even. And then, you know, again, moving into the future, you know, maybe they're building a data center, you know, an AI school, a data center school, digital asset school. There's a lot of interesting stuff where this type of partnership could go down. And I always thought it was really interesting. Bryce put us onto this. Our fearless leader was Galaxy is a digital assets firm. And you want to do your research on that, but they also are an AI play. They have all these data centers. A lot of people don't know that. And so it's one of my stocks that I'm kind of like trying to do as much research as I can about all the things that maybe the average, you know, investor doesn't know about everything that they're involved with as well. But guns up for Texas Tech, the Red Raiders.
Yep.
Has this ever... Again, forgive my ignorance here, but has this ever happened where not even a crypto company, but like a public traded company has bought the naming rights to a college stadium?
That's a great question.
I don't think so, at least not to my knowledge of like a major stadium, because they're usually named after someone of significance in relation to that school, whether they be someone significant or a donor or a founder. Like you look across the board. And that's usually what it is, at least in my experience. I have yet to see a publicly traded company get the naming rights to a college stadium?
Yeah, this is a quick Google. We've got Papa John Stadium for University of Louisville. We've got Kroger Stadium for Kentucky.
Okay, so
but not So I mean, not a ton though, because you're right. I was you know, naming a bunch off my head. What they're gonna start doing is like an Alabama's Bryant Denny Stadium.
Yeah.
At Nick Saban Field, brought to you by.
Brought to you by
the Citadel. That's the next step. That's the next step.
Well, there actually is a Citadel school too. I'm sure the Citadel's gonna go after the Citadel in D2.
That would be good.
1AA.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Ken Griffin might just buy it. Like Ken Griffin,
he's just gonna
buy it. And be like, oh, I thought I had to buy it. My bad, y'all. Friend of
Citadel
the show.
Citadel sponsored by Citadel.
friend of the show, Ken Griffin. But yeah, I think this is a fun story. Obviously, friends of the show, truly Galaxy, they've been on. But yeah, I'd love to get them back on and talk about this and see if we can get out to Lubbock for a game. Get some Red Raider action. But that's going to wrap us up for Friday, getting everybody excited for football season. As Brendan knows, Hunter, I'm a huge, you know, I'm a football guy. I bleed football. I love it. It's a huge, huge part of my entire being, is just getting to watch you guys put on the pads and hear that thud. It just gets me going. And so it's right around the corner. Love to see, as we end the show, love to see the cross section of digital assets, data centers, and college football. But that's going to do it for us. I really appreciate your time, Brendan. I really appreciate your time, Hunter. Thank you to everybody else who's listening on the live. Solid showing today. Appreciate it on Friday morning. Give us a thumbs up. If you're new, on the bottom right, hit the subscribe button. We have a ton of great interviews that went out this week. Coinbase, Robinhood, go back and listen to those if you haven't. There's huge, huge alpha there. Brendan and Bryce crushed those interviews. You have to go back and listen to those. Next week, Bryce and I are heading to a conference outside of New York City at the Out East Conference presented by The Tie. We're going to be sitting down with tons of insiders, tons of individuals, doing a ton of great content that we're going to bring back for you. So again, hit that subscribe button. You're not going to want to miss it. Thank you all for tuning in on a Friday morning, but that's all for now. Goodbye, everybody.